Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. We are in municipal election season. Vote-by-mail ballots are headed to your home right now and need to be postmarked by April 3rd or dropped off stamp-free at 5 accessible vote centers or 12 secure drop box locations. Those include Lusac Library, the school district, community rec centers, and a number of schools. Today we're talking about Prop 10, which includes a charter amendment and proposes selling ML&P to Chugach Electric. Voters will decide whether the city should be authorized, but not required, to sell the public utility, Municipal Light and Power, to Chugach Electric Association, a member-owned cooperative. The purpose of our show is to fully understand this proposition so we can be good, informed voters. We expect civil dialogue, good questions, and clarifying answers. And I'm here to facilitate that discussion. I'd like to welcome my two guests in the studio today. We've got Lee Thiebert, CEO from Chugach Electric.
Kathleen, thanks for inviting us here, and it's great to be in Hometown Alaska.
Yeah, glad to have you. And Bill Falsey, Anchorage Municipal Manager.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
All right. And, I have questions for you. I've been listening to the town hall meetings and reading, the dialogue in our local community paper. But I really want to invite our listeners. This is almost like an on-air town hall meeting. And if they have questions or clarifications they want, it's a perfect time for them to give us a call and get clarity on their questions. So you can call us in Anchorage at 550-8433. Or we welcome email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So I am going to start with some questions, but I'm hoping that I am preempted soon by listeners who have their own questions, since they're all voters. But I'm going to start with you, Bill, as a city manager. Why does the city want to sell its public utility, ML&P, to Chugach Electric? Why?
Well, the proposed sale that comes to voters in the mail any day now, as Proposition 10, is the culmination of a very long conversation. And we think it proposes a sale that is good for taxpayers, good for ratepayers, and good for the local economy. So the Municipal Light and Power is the old city of Anchorage's utility. So it was a city that merged into the Greater Anchorage Area Borough in 1975 when we created this municipality of Anchorage. And for the last 40 years, we've had that legacy arrangement where we have had two utilities serving 9/11ths, the majority of Anchorage residents. There's some questions about why that makes sense. If you are a Chugach, Evil River, Birchwood resident, or a Girdwood resident, why do you own a utility that only serves the old city area? And one way we had traditionally resolved that was by treating it like a real business, and it paid a dividend to general government, which could be used to lower property taxes or provide for essential services. But that dividend, more often than not, has not come to general government, and right now it is turned off. So a sale of the utility can help taxpayers by restoring some return on that equity. But the conversation really washed up on our shores because the business community thought there's a lot of inefficiencies in having two utilities in a city of our size. And merging those utilities could really reduce utility rates or keep pressure on utility rates from rising down. And that's a basic input to the economy. So mm-hmm. It's an economic development story. So good for taxpayers, good for ratepayers, and a sale to Chugach Electric keeps all the profits of the utility and all the jobs here in Anchorage.
Right. So take me back. Now, you say it's like a 30-year discussion. That's the number that's... We've been talking about this for 30 years. Lots of people think it's a great idea. But something happened last year that really increased the urgency here. I talked to Bill Pop over at the AEDC, and he was hearing from business owners about ML&P rate increases, a 37% rate increase. And so they started a task force to study this, right? And then they came to the city and to the two utilities and said, we'd like you guys to talk.
Well, that's right. In this go-round, it really begins in a significant way when we receive an open letter from the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation in April of 2017 mm-hmm. that says we have impaneled the business community to create a utilities working group, and we've studied this question, and our recommendation is that you take a very serious look at merging the two utilities. And I think you'd have to ask them what precipitated their efforts. It is true that the cost of building the new Plant 2A, which is a highly efficient new generation facility that Municipal Light and Power constructed and now operates, and which was needed to replace some of its aging infrastructure, came online, and that had to be rolled into the rate base. That may have helped shape this conversation because it brought our rates into greater parity and did focus a lot of attention on utility rates in the city.
Well, let me jump over to you, Lee. Why would Chugach Electric want to take on that financial burden, that new plant that's so expensive?
Well, I think what we looked at is, Anchorage is a city of a little under 300,000 people, And to have two vertically integrated utilities, that means we have everything from generation to transmission to distribution to consumers, just doesn't make good sense. And so what we see is it's just economies of scale, it's efficiency of having one overall utility. And I think when the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation said, okay, Lee Thiebert, you and Mark Johnson sit down and try to figure out how can we make this better for consumers, we go back to looking at what is in the best interest, and we look at other successes we've had in a number of occasions. We did the South Central Power Project together. You know, when we bought the Beluga River field together this last, you know, couple of years, that made a lot of sense. We started a power pool that we're working together. So I think everybody could see that we've had some successes, and they said, okay, what else can you do to make this better for consumer rates? Mm-hmm. And that's when we really sat down, and they actually hired a consultant, and they looked at everything we had.
MLNP hired a consultant.
AEDC actually did.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And they brought in a consultant, NERA, Economic Development Entity, and they looked at what we had done, and they said, you know, really, you guys have picked the low-hanging fruit. And what you really need is just merge these two utilities and make the most efficient operation that you can. And that's really what we've ended up doing. And we negotiated with municipality. And I think we've come up with a good win-win solution for everybody.
So we have some callers. And I'm going to go ahead and welcome someone from Palmer. is their name Palmer? Hello?
Hello.
Hi, is your name Palmer?
Oh, Thomas and Palmer.
Okay, it is Palmer.
That was quick. I'm first.
And you're from Palmer.
I got some, you know, members of the city, they think, oh, that's our utility, and we don't want to sell it to a private company, and I don't want to sell it to a private company either. However, Chugach is a co-op, which means that now you'll be an owner customer, and you'll get a check in the mail 10 years later with interest. And so that's a good thing, and everybody keeps their jobs, and they can run the single plant, and the city will have $1 billion in the bank.
So you're in favor of this, I take it.
And then rather than a big tax relief, you leave it in the bank and have that cushion there and live off the interest, and then you don't have to be like Detroit. And it only makes sense, and if you wait, you're going to sell it to somebody else for $300 million like they did the telephone company, and that doesn't make sense.
Okay. So do you have any questions today for our guests here in the studio?
What's that?
Do you have any questions for our guests?
Oh, well, I would like them to promote solar. They want to do their big one. I think it would be cool if they could put 600-watt panels on everybody's home so it doesn't overload the grid and, you know, it's used by the homes. And I think that's a good way forward to help people get into solar and come up with a program with financing so that you can put 600 watts on your house and not disturb the grid, as it were.
Great. You know, some of those questions that you're raising or those ideas that you're raising were things we're going to talk about in the show a little bit later. They came up at the town hall meeting, and it's good to hear them raised here. But I'm going to thank you, Tom, for your call, and I'm going to move over to Neil. Hi, Neil. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call.
Yeah. And what's your question?
Well, I actually have two real quick ones. One is Goldman Sachs valued MLNP between $700 and $1 billion. I'd like to know why we're asked to pay the highest dollar figure, the billion versus 707. Obviously, MLNP overbuilt, and so I would consider them to be a bit of a distressed company. The second question is, Dan Sullivan did a very good job in Anchorage Dispatch talking about how the sale of a utility was supposed to be done through the assembly, and I wonder why we're not following
good
that process.
Let's break those down and take the first one. Lee, this sounds like a good question for you.
Yeah, I think, you know, we when we did the evaluation, and obviously we didn't know what the values were going in. I mean, we made an estimate of our best bid. And we looked at it, and we looked at what the assets were worth, what their retained earnings were. And we looked at what other like transactions took place in the lower 48. So we based our bid based on what we saw as the value of MLNP and the value of MLNP based on transactions, similar transactions that have been done in Alaska and in the lower 48 in very recent transactions. So when we did our analysis, we came up with the value, and it was $882 million, and then we added in the what is called the payment in lieu of taxes, which is the PILT, and we added that back on top, because if we were competing with a for-profit entity that would pay property taxes, that's kind of the number what we would
have
to beat.
That's how you get to a billion.
That's how you get to the billion.
Okay, Neil, does that make sense?
I understand that calculation. I just don't understand why, if we have a third party that has done an evaluation, that we don't take that third party, because they're not biased by any way, and we're not the lower 48, we're in Alaska. So I would say the 707 would have been, and you can add PELT to that if you like.
Isn't that what you did?
Well, I think we ended up with...
No, he started with 820.
Oh, eight,
we were at 882, and we didn't have the valuation that MLMP did when we started out. We did it based on what we knew the fixed cost of MLMP. They had about $525 million worth of debt. They had $170 million of basically retained earnings or equity. And then our valuation that our consultant did looked at other transactions, and they were transactions that happened in Alaska and in the lower 48. And there's not a lot of utility sales transactions, so you have to use, I think, the lower 48 to see what values are going for.
And if I could add to that, I'll say the Goldman Sachs report that the caller is referencing was an internal Municipality of Anchorage document, because we needed some first sense of what we thought the utility was going to be worth before we had a conversation with Chugach. So as Lee said, they didn't have the benefit of that. But the other thing to say about that is that document was designed for an open sale, sort of a take all comers, what would you expect this thing to go for on the open market? And the chart that the caller is referencing does not include a property tax stream. So if he's looking at there are many different ways to value a company. One of them was a discounted cash flow analysis. I believe that's where he's getting a 700 to about $1 billion range. The Chugach number is really in the middle of that range, because you have to scrape the property tax payments off of it. So we found an arrangement that got Chugach in the sweet spot, not really at the extreme high end. And that market test that we later did with the other companies that came to us and expressed an interest further validated that said that the numbers that we were getting from Chugach were competitive in the market and not out of line for what most parties who are potentially interested in acquiring MLMP would pay.
Mm-hmm. Neil, any comeback on that?
I'll just say that, you know, I'm on the Chugach side, so that we're going to end up paying the bill, and I think it's too high. So if you wouldn't mind, just answer the second question. Why aren't you following the process that the Assembly had set out for selling a utility?
Which means opening it to bid.
Yeah, I'm happy to take
right,
on that
and
process.
Taking a 60% vote. Dan Sullivan did a very nice job in the paper reviewing an article about how it was supposed to be done. So why aren't we following that process?
Yeah, I'm happy to answer that question. That process would not have worked well in this setting, and so we had to come up with a different process. And I think the Charles Wolfworth article that you saw in the newspaper more recently actually did a very effective job of responding to former Mayor Sullivan's op-ed. But the short answer is this. In 1975, there was a very open-ended invitation for the Assembly to ask the voters for near carte blanche authority to sell a utility. That got amended ahead of the ATU sale, the sale of the telephone utility. And in its present form, it now says that the Assembly can go to voters and ask for permission to sell a utility to anyone on any terms, at any price, on any timeline, so long as the person that they ultimately sell the utility to is deemed the highest responsive bidder in a process that the Assembly and the Assembly alone controls. They get to pick all of the factors that will be considered and the relative weight of all those factors, and if voters give them a 60% authority, they will pick the outcome. Voters will not know at the head of the process where the utility is going to go. That is not what anybody had in mind here. That is not what the AEDC asked us to look at. That is not what the Assembly asked us to look at. They said there are unique factors to Chugach. This is the only kind of arrangement where Anchorage voters are on both sides of the deal. They're either member owners of the cooperative or future members of the cooperative, or citizen owners of the utility as taxpayers. So we had to come up with a different kind of arrangement. And that's what Proposition 10 does. It amends the charter to say we're going to sell not to anyone at any price on any timeline, but to Chugach at an indicated price on a specific timeline and with specific terms. What's the voter requirement to make that happen? That's been set in the state constitution since the beginning of time. The state constitution says that constitutional questions, questions of charter significance at a locality, are decided by a majority of voters, and so that's what we've done.
All right, Neil. Anything else? We're going to move on. I think that's okay, that's a,
no, I understand, and thanks for the time on the air. I'm still going to vote no on the proposition. I encourage other people to do that as well. I think a backdoor deal is not the right deal, and let's just bring it out into the open and do a fair bit.
Okay. Thanks, Neil, for calling. We appreciate your participation. Now I'm going to ask you a question, Lee. You know, if something looks too good, it probably is too good. And when I read, you know, rates will not go up and no one will lose their jobs, I thought, gosh, how can that possibly be? And I want to say to you, how can that possibly be? So we're saying that workers would not lose their jobs and Chugach, we'd all be Chugach members and we wouldn't see rate increases. So help me understand that better.
Okay. I think there's I guess, two parts of this. Number one, it's the purchase price. And the other thing is the savings. And we look at the three pies of this thing. It's the acquisition price basically covers the debt that MLMP has and pays for the retained earnings. And when we pay for that at Chugach, it will actually cost a little bit less than what ratepayers of MLMP are paying today. And so that's the one component. The other one is the payment in lieu of taxes, and that is exactly what MLMP ratepayers are paying today. And we've agreed to make that payment for 30 years. Now, the other is the $170 million. It's kind of the share the savings type thing that we're talking about. And what we can do is we've looked at this transaction over the 30 or 40 years, and we're going to save between $300 and $400 million over that timeline. And where we came up with those numbers is typical transactions across the country save about 8 to 12% of non-fuel O&M. And that's really what we have done, is taken a look at those numbers. We'll get down into specifics when we actually do, you know, the acquisition. But those are kind of the ballpark numbers that we're looking at. The next one is no layoffs. And what we said is we would not do layoffs and we would not increase rates. And how we can do that is we right-size the organization over time. And between the two organizations, both MLMP and Chugach, together we have about 500 employees. And we have attrition of 4 to 5% per year. That means that there's 20 to 25 people that leave every year. And so we can right-size this organization over, I'd say, a 5 or 6 year period of time. And one of the big things when you're putting two organizations is you want to make sure you don't have fear with all the employees. You have to maintain safety and productivity. So we feel the best way to do this is deal with attrition over time and make sure there's not a big fear in the employment ranks, because they're really the people that keep the utility going. They're the people that climb the poles and that keep the lights on and answer the telephones and keep the generators running. So we can right-size this organization just through attrition over time, and we think that's the best productive way of getting this done. And there will be savings, and savings will go to half the savings will go to the municipality that they'll put into a trust fund for everybody in Anchorage, and the other half will go into reduced rates for customers.
Mm-hmm. Just want to let folks know, if they're like, what's all this talk about? It's dense and complicated and savings and all this. We're talking about Prop 10, which everybody's going to get to vote on in the municipality, and it authorizes the city to sell MLMP to Chugach Electric. It does not require it. It is not the end of this discussion. It's the beginning of this discussion. And if you've got questions or comments or just want to share your curiosity about this, give us a call at 550-8433 in Anchorage, or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Let's see, Lee, I'm going to go back to you with this question. At the town hall meeting, I heard you say there's three pieces to this purchase. And you've talked a little bit about it, but let's go through it again. Oh, here comes the phones. Okay. So there were three chunks, $712 million, $142 million, and $170 million. Just take each one and tell me what they are.
Okay, there is the three pieces. The $712 million is basically the fixed cost. That's the amount that we're going to go out and borrow. And that is the $525 million of debt that MLMP currently has. It is $170 million of their equity or retained earnings, and it's $18 million that covers the defeasance cost. And the defeasance is just a fancy word for financing, and I won't get into the details there. But those that makes up the 712. That's what Chugach is going to go out and borrow. And when we borrow that money, it will cost no more than what MLMP ratepayers pay today. The second piece is the $142 million, and that's the payment in lieu of taxes. And that's exactly what MLMP pays today in equivalent property taxes. So what we understood is if we were competing with for-profit entities would pay a property tax. Chugach is a not-for-profit cooperative, doesn't pay property taxes. Mm-hmm. But we felt to be competitive, we'd have to make these payments. So we've agreed to make payments for 30 years, and that's the equivalent of $142 million. And it's using the formula that property taxes are made. So it's really no different than what the MUSA that MLMP pays today. That third piece is the $170 million. And that's that shared savings that I've been talking about. When by putting these two utilities together, getting the economies of scale, getting the efficiencies, we will save between $300 and $400 million over 30 to 40 years. And so what we do is we've given part of that back to the municipality, the $170 million. The balance will go into reducing rates for customers or for members. Mm-hmm. So that's okay. the three components.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and take a caller. We've got Paul. Hi, Paul. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Hi. I have a question about the right sizing. When you talk about right sizing, I guess you're talking about the economy of scale and the consolidation of the workforce. When that process is complete, how many jobs will no longer be contributing to the local economy after the process of right sizing?
You know, that's a difficult one. There was a study done back in 2008, and Navigant Consulting took a look at this, and they said the efficiency of having both organizations together would be about 100 employees less than it would be at that time. But MLMP and Chugach since that time have reduced our staffs by about 60 people, so that would leave about 40 that would be in that ballpark. So what I can say is we will take a look at this over time, and you know there's probably a lot more work to really figure out what the most ideal best practices are of both organizations, but I'd say if you want to use a ballpark number, it's probably in that 40 range.
Paul, Eddie.
Hi. Yeah, when I was just going to say when I look at making a decision on the proposition, you know, one of the things I balance is, you know, the effects on the economy, not just in terms of, you know, my own personal savings when it comes to paying my electric bill, but also the health of the municipal, you know, economy. And so it's really, in my mind, good to get a handle on those lost jobs, you know, in a real more definitive way.
Yeah, and
thank you for the time.
And maybe I'll just do a follow-up on that. I think, you know, you do have a reduction in staff overall between the two utilities, but that results in lower electric rates, which provides more income into the community. And if you take an economic analysis, you'd actually see that there probably creates more jobs in the community by losing 40 at the utility. It actually expands. When you put that money into the economy, you actually end up with more jobs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take another caller. Sally, you're on Hometown Alaska.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a complex first question and then a second question. The first question deals with, has the city definitively defined all of the property that is owned by Municipal Light and Power as endorsed by the assessor's office to confirm that all of the property lines and all of the ownership rights are very, very crystal clear? And secondarily, I understand that there is significant environmental remediation issues that need to be addressed with the sale of MLMP. And then finally, my last question deals with the MUSA contribution that is made to the city of Anchorage. I understand payment in lieu of tax, and I know that that's a factor, but I'm pretty certain that the general population is not familiar with MUSA, and that contribution that is made to the city coffers as well. So I'll take my answer offline. Thank you.
Thanks, Ellie. Boy, complex. Three parts. Bill, you want to tackle number one?
We'll rack them up and we'll see if we can knock them all down.
Okay.
So the first is, have we defined all of MLMP's properties? The answer is yes. The real estate department maintains a catalog of all of the real property which is owned and used by MLMP and the leaseholds that they have around the city. And they're always in the process of chewing those up. I think they're actually working on renewing some of their property leases right now. That'll also be something that'll be further scrutinized if the voters give us a thumbs up on Proposition 10. We'll pivot from that to both sides doing due diligence. Chugach will want to see, what does MLMP really own and do we have the paperwork to prove it? And that'll all come out in that process. The second is environmental remediation. Some of the MLMP sites are in downtown, pre-earthquake. There probably are areas in those properties that may have some environmental contamination. I think that we're aware of some in some small degree. That'll also be part of the due diligence process, as we'll do some environmental site assessment. And if it turns out there are things which are more significant than either of us know about now, that'll be part of the conversation as we're negotiating the final purchase price. If it turns out that MLMP has some significant liabilities that today we don't know about, that's something that could really affect that conversation, but it's something we'll step into if the voters give us the thumbs up to proceed. And the last is the caller mentioned MUSA and MISA, four-letter acronyms that
pretty
probably
tough.
Mean absolutely nothing to most
right.
of your membership and listeners. They decode as the Municipal Utility Service Assessment and the Municipal Enterprise Service Assessment, which is a fancy way of saying that all of the things that feel like businesses that the municipality is engaged in, offering sewer service, freshwater service, trash cleanup, operating a port, operating an airport in Merrill Field, we make them pay something like property taxes. And those are the MUSA, the Municipal Utility Service Assessment, and the MISA, the Municipal Enterprise Service Assessment. As Lee said, they are calculated in the exact same manner as you would calculate property tax payments. And MLMP pays a MUSA right now. So we're receiving something like $9 million in payments that are like property taxes from MLMP, and those go into the tax cap calculation. So the fixed amount of money that the municipality can levy every year in taxes includes MLMP's contribution. Part of the reason why it was in our interest to make sure that we continued to have a payment stream from a potential future buyer like a Chugach was to make sure that we didn't lose that revenue coming into the coffers. And then one of the reasons that Proposition 10 ends up taking the form that it does of a charter amendment is because the current charter rules would actually damage the tax cap if you were to sell the utility. You have to make a correction so that property taxes couldn't rise by the level that was once paid by MLMP when those come out of the tax cap calculation itself.
Okay. Well, Jessica's been holding. Jessica, we're going to get to you. You've got a great question about savings for customers. So we're going to come right back to you after we take a very short break here. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
You're back on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy, and we are talking about Prop 10, which you're going to get to vote on by April 3rd, and it is whether or not we should buy the Municipal Light and Power, whether Chugach Electric should buy it for us. We have Bill Falsey here, city manager from Anchorage, and Lee Thiebert from CEO of Chugach Electric. And we did have Jessica on the line, and we just lost her. She had a question about what were the savings for customers, and of course, I think that's a great question, and I'm going to get back to it, but I'm going to go ahead and welcome Don onto the show. He's got a question about planning for future tech. Hi, Don.
Hi. Glad to hear you people having this discussion. I was just going through the thing the other day on the flyer they sent us. I'm wondering what the situation is going to be for further development. I know you guys already bought into, folks at UDAC bought into Fire Island windmills. And I also know that you were the first to take up a recycling of your heat over there on Tyonek off of the other generators that you had to incorporate that into an additional generator and become more efficient for your total operation. But what are we looking at for solar panels on various scale? I see some popping up over here in Muldoon. What are we looking at for future windmills on a smaller scale that can be hooked into the grid or work independently?
I think that's for Lee.
Okay, those are great questions, and I think the one advantage of putting these two utilities together is it gives us an opportunity to spread the cost of some of these projects out amongst a bigger rate base. And as you said, you know, we've done Fire Island Phase 1. We have the technology that we've done right now is we did a small battery energy storage combined with a flywheel to try to, it's a pilot project to say, okay, how can we regulate Fire Island without using other resources? And so we've got that working right now, that's in place, and we're looking at a larger battery that would help us regulate that project and probably an expansion of Fire Island. We're also looking at a community solar project, and that project is engineered right now. We're going to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska to get permission to do what we call a community solar project. So rather than putting a solar project on your roof, you can actually buy it from Chugach, and we'll do it on a bigger scale. So we're doing a 500 kW project that will be located on our property, and you can buy just a panel or two, whatever you want to do to offset your electric usage. And so it's a much better deal where you get a cheaper cost to the economy of scale for a larger project, and everybody can own basically their piece of the pie. So that project should be underway. We're going to start selling options here probably next month, and as soon as we get 80% prescriptions, we're going to go ahead and get that built. So we hope to have that up and rolling by this summer. Beyond that, we're looking at a lot of new technologies. You know, every year there's some new technology or technologies get cheaper. You know, batteries have gotten significantly cheaper in the last few years. So those are the types of things that we're looking at. We're starting to look at electric vehicle chargers. You know, Chugach bought an electric vehicle here. This last year we put in a charging station at Chugach, and we're looking at trying to expand that, working with the municipality, working with other utilities on charging stations up and down the rail belt. Because right now, you know, you take a electric vehicle and it'll go a couple hundred miles, and it's just a little bit short of getting to Fairbanks or going to the Kenai. So we want to make sure we have things available that will provide for electric vehicles in the future. When you look at a number of manufacturers that are out there, they're all talking about making significant strides in this particular area, and we need to make sure that the utility can accommodate that when that industry changes. So I think by combining these utilities together, we can provide, you know, the benefits of looking at these technologies and doing it better for our ratepayers.
You know, something you said at the town hall that I thought was interesting is that customers, home customers, I think we're talking, are using less energy now than, I think you had a figure of 700 kilowatt, I can't remember,
yeah,
down to 600. You know, I thought that's like, well, that's good because they're getting better, things in their homes, you know, energy efficiencies in their homes?
Absolutely. I mean, we've gone from, you know, when I started, we were probably looking at 750 kilowatt hours per month. Now we're down under 600. So in 10 years, we've dropped about 20%.
Yeah.
Our customers have dropped 20%
right.
in their usage. And it's, you know, it's going with the high energy, you know, fixtures, you know, going with LED lighting mm-hmm. to more efficient furnaces, more insulation. Mm-hmm. People are very energy conscious. And they really want to make, well, they want to reduce their cost. Mm-hmm. And so certainly we've got a lot of information on our website on what people can do to reduce their energy consumption. We're looking at actually offering a service to be able to go out and meet with customers and tell them what efficient operations they can have. So I think it's just something that we have to be very cognizant of. And people want to take that into control. And mm-hmm. I think that's one thing we support very much.
I'm going to throw our numbers out, but I've got a question for you, Lee, right after that. So if you're interested in talking to our experts here, call us at 550-8433 or send an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Lee, my question for you is, what will the city do with the money?
Well, this is Bill.
I'm sorry, Bill. I know you're Bill.
I'm happy to answer that question. You know, there is a sense that when we talk about this as a billion-dollar transaction, because that's the amount of money that Chugach ultimately pushes across the table to the municipality, that there will become some moment where the city is awash in $1 billion of loose cash. That is never going to happen. The Municipal Light and Power currently now has more than $500 million in debt. So of the $1 billion that we receive from Chugach, more than half of it immediately goes just to retire the debt that we have on our books. Then we get another about $170 million at closing, which we take and either use to pay off other municipal debts, transaction costs, or put it right into the local permanent fund, which goes by the name of the Municipal Trust, the MOA Trust, which is where we've kept the body of the money that we got from the sale of the telephone utility. The remainder of the money comes in slowly over time. And it comes in two forms. It's the payment in lieu of taxes, which just replaces the old MLNP payment in lieu of taxes and spends the same way. The rest of it is another $170 million in annual payments, which, like the first $170 million, is squirreled right away into that municipal trust, the local permanent fund, which has a protected corpus that we'll never be able to touch. It will only spin off dividends and operates much like the state's permanent funds.
So when you're out at public meetings, are you people grasping this?
I think so. There are a certain number of people that come into the room thinking that this is a jubilee year, happy days are here again, all our problems are solved. And then there are probably some other people in the room who are also terrified that there's $1 billion floating around the municipality. But I think when we explain this, I think people are pretty calmed by it and actually reassured by it, that this is not an occasion for us to invest money in ways which make no sense because money is cheap, free, and easy. This is actually a way of structuring the municipal finances where we get some certainty that the investment we have made in Municipal Light and Power provides some tax relief or some real dividend back to the municipality for the next 30 years and really in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and welcome Mike onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, Mike.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great. What's your question?
Well, my question has to deal with MLNP's interest in the Beluga River gas field. The first part is that interest part of this proposed sale?
The answer to that question is yes.
Oh, it is? Okay, my question then is, how was that valued, and how was that valued considered in the purchase price? And a follow-up to that is, did you consider rights issues in the operating agreement with respect to the interest or the percentage of interest that could possibly be sold?
Well, let me take a stab at that. So for listeners who are not aware, in the 1990s, Municipal Light and Power acquired one-third of an oil and gas unit that is on the western side of Cook Inlet. It's called the Beluga River Unit. It ended up being a pretty screaming deal for ratepayers. We have some of the cheapest gas costs in the rail belt. And in 2016, we, with Chugach, doubled down on that. ConocoPhillips was getting out of the business, and they were selling their one-third share of the Beluga River Unit. We ended up splitting that one-third share, with the result that Municipal Light and Power now owns about 56% of that oil and gas unit. Chugach owns 10%, and the remainder is owned and operated by Hillcorp. How did we go about valuing that? Well, one way was with the general financial analysis. We had the Goldman Sachs of the world say there are a lot of different ways to value an enterprise, and one is you can look at its various cash flows. One is you can look at the price-to-earnings ratios of how MLNP is producing earnings compared to those which are publicly traded, or utilities which have actually traded on the market. You put it all together, and you get an enterprise value. I don't know that you end up having to break out a specific value for Beluga River Union. unit. You could do that as an academic exercise, but it wouldn't pay particular dividends in the course of actually negotiating a sale of MLMP because, of course, the prices that you get in from those who are expressing interest or from Chugach don't itemize the bill of sale. They say this is the total amount of money we propose to pay you for the utility, including the Beluga River unit. There's even some folks who have indicated that the Beluga River unit is of great value to the ratepayers, but of less value to a potential purchaser because the value really comes in reducing the gas costs. I think that answered most of the question. I'll leave
Lee, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I think, you know, really, as far as our acquisition, we did not place a value on the gas field because that gas goes directly to consumers. So the benefit in the lower prices that basically ratepayers pay exactly what it costs to produce that gas out of the field. And so we didn't pay additional value for that because that value goes directly back to consumers. And so really it's kind of a zero-sum game for an act like Chugach who's acquiring it because that value, we can't really mark it up into market value and pay a premium for that because then the consumer would end up paying market price for that gas. And that's not what they're getting today. So one of the things we made sure is, and this is one of the big deals and why this makes sense for the municipality, is Chugach agreed to give the gas that's being used today by MLMP ratepayers will stay with MLMP ratepayers, so they won't see an increase in cost. That's the commitment that we had to make this deal work. So although they're, if you sold it to an outside firm, they might say, hey, you know, that's worth $200 million or $250 million based on current market price of gas. But then the ratepayer has to pay that $200 or $250 million. So that's something that we did not want to do, the municipality didn't want to do. So that saving stays with the consumer.
So Mike, did that answer your question?
Well, I'm not sure, but can I assume then that the value of the Beluga River gas field is within the $712 million that you're offering as part of your three-part purchase price?
Yeah, I would say that if you want to take this as an entire entity, you know, it's the $882 million is what we valued everything at. So it would be embedded in that. But again, I don't think we paid specifically for, you know, the gas assets because those go directly to, the benefit goes to the consumer.
And what about the issue of the preferential rights? Was that addressed in this?
I'm not sure I understand what you mean by preferential rights. Maybe just give me a little bit more information.
Well, basically, it's a right of first refusal by any working interest owners in the unit.
So I think at the end of the day, you've got three owners of this particular Beluga River unit. You've got MLMP, you've got Chugach, and you've got Hilcor. And MLMP is basically assigning all of their interest in the Beluga River unit to Chugach in this case. So there, I guess there is no any other additional preferential rights. Those 100% of MLMP's rights will be sold to Chugach.
And Hilcorp's okay with that?
We haven't had any long-term, you know, we'll get past this thing, but I've had some preliminary discussions with Hilcor, and I certainly don't think they're going to have any issues with it.
That's if we get through this vote, that'll be that
more
that
due diligence.
Yeah, more due diligence. Okay, Mike, thank you. Good questions. I'm going to welcome Stu onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, Stu.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Real quick, about 7 years ago, we had a $5 million grant come through the Northeast Community Council for a greenhouse next to the MLMP plant there at Muldoon and Glen Highway. That would be heated with power, excess power from the plant. We kind of passed up on it due to lots of factors, but the idea could be that we could relocate the greenhouse in Russian Jack, which takes about $80,000 a year to heat, and put something twice as big over there by the MMC plant, and it would probably be a real good thing for the community. Would this sale facilitate something like that?
Well, I think that's something that we'd always take a look at. I know there were some people, when we put in the South Central Power Project using excess heat to heat greenhouses, that was a discussion we had at the time. I know the engineers did the economics, and at that time, it didn't really pay off. But I think that's something that certainly we could take a look at And if it makes economic sense for the developer and for Chugach, that's something that we could take a look at.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Stu. Again, we've got about 15 minutes, and so we still have time for calls. Give us a call at 550-8433 or send us an email at hometownalaskapublic.org. We're talking about Prop 10 and whether the city should allow Chugach Electric to buy MLNP. Let's see. I sat through the town hall meeting because there was a big Q&A section at the end, and I thought I would throw out some of those questions that people were asking. One was speed. People were sort of concerned about speed. And I know one answer is interest rates. They're in a good spot now. What else is there to why we're moving so quickly? And again, it doesn't mean we are absolutely selling MLNP. It means we're going to look further at it if we vote yes on Prop 10. But talk about speed, Bill.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about speed. And I think both of the considerations you mentioned are real, that there is a very healthy interest rate environment now and that this is not the end of the process. This is launching us into the middle of the process. But part of the answer is this is a conversation that has been going on in some form or another for a very long time, decades even. So the conversation, taken in a large sense, has been going on not in a rapid way, but in a slow motion way for a very long time. But by the time you get to 2017, the clock starts again in April when we get that open letter from the business community and the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation and an open instruction from the Assembly to start looking at this seriously in July. The internal work that we did mostly took place between July and December, but as soon as that internal work was done, we turned all the cards face up as quickly as we could. So we held a press conference on December 21st, announcing our intention to move forward with something like Proposition 10, invited Chugach to put the terms of their offer on the table face up for all the world to see. And the information is now all out there. So in order to sell a utility, we had to put it on a ballot. Timeline then was that we had to get this ready for the April ballot if we wanted this to happen anytime in the near future, and that meant that we had to have our ordinance in play by as early as January. So we have been on that timeline. I think for those who think that we are moving briskly, I would say all of the information that any person would need to make an informed decision is now out there. So you can see our financial analysis. You can see the concerns that came to us from the external entities. You can see what others who expressed interest in purchasing the utility told us. All of those bids are open without any redactions available to you online. So there's no new information that we would be waiting for to come in if we were to say, let's not do this year, let's do it next year. And then look at the timeline going after April. If the voters tell us yes, and we can continue to work on this after April, we'll both assemble our teams, small army of lawyers. We'll be off negotiating a definitive agreement, and that will have to go back to the Assembly for another round of approval with a whole additional set of public process. It'll go back to the Chugach Board, and ultimately it turns into a proceeding in front of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. And that could be as long as a six-month affair with real evidence being taken, testimony, and intervention by lawyers from the Attorney General's office, whose entire mission is to represent the public. So it may feel like we have moved quickly from December to April, but remember, this just sets us up to continue working all the way through middle of next year.
Mm-hmm. Anything to add to that, Lee?
No, I think, you know, from the timeline, we talked about why are we doing this now, and I think and we've talked about it. It's a couple things. Number one, it's the interest rates that you talked about earlier. Is interest rates are very favorable right now, and when you borrow $700 million, you know, interest rates make a huge difference.
It's a bit of change.
So
yeah.
It's a big deal. Yeah. So the sooner we can do this, the better it will be for ratepayers. And the other thing is the technology is changing, and that goes back to the conversation we had where people's energy use is a lot less than it used to be. And so we're seeing that over and over. Mm-hmm. And when costs go up just with inflation and sales go down, the only thing you can do is raise rates. So mm-hmm. I think one thing we're doing is by combining these two utilities together, get more efficiency, we can overcome some of that reduction in sales to customers. So I think those are a couple of things. The other thing I've talked about is you really, for a transaction to happen like this, you need a willing buyer and a willing seller. And we have come together on a deal that makes sense for both parties. And that's what I don't think we ended up with before. I don't think we had the leadership to make sure that this deal can get done. And a lot of people have talked about the paralysis of just looking at, you know, these study and study and study. And it's just time to act. We've looked at this a number of mm-hmm. times. It does make sense. and the time is now.
Let me ask you this. It's April 4th. Voters have said no. What happens then? Would you try again? What would happen?
Well, I think we would probably conduct some listening sessions to see what the voters had in mind, what the hesitance to move forward is. One answer is we would be back in the status quo. MLMP would continue to operate as a separate utility. Our town of less than 300,000 people would have, for 9/11 of it, two utilities operating side by side, and we would be having some opportunity costs that we just wouldn't be able to realize those efficiencies. Mm-hmm. And I suspect that the multi-decade conversation that has been resurfacing from time to time would resurface again somewhere down the road, and we would be Groundhog Day all over again.
All right. I've got another caller on the line. Caroline, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you again for a great program. I wanted to mention Chugach, and I think they've been proactive in wind power. I believe they were the ones that did the Fire Island, although there was a Native corporation involved in that. That's one thing. And then Kodiak, I understand Kodiak is one of two places in the country that has 100% from the wind and the sun and the water, that they have 100% available. They don't have to pay for anything.
So does that relate
the installation of those things?
So you're enthusiastic about that, but does that have anything?
I am. I think Chugach has shown a proactive approach to things, and again, it has a much larger range in which to operate as opposed to the munis. And they're a willing buyer, and they have, I think, a very good reputation.
Well, thanks a lot, Caroline. I appreciate your calling in and participating. We really appreciate it.
And Kathleen, I'll say on that point, that's the second caller that's mentioned renewable energy benefits. And it's interesting because if you look at this transaction mostly through the lens of the price that we're getting for the utility, the effect on utility rates, on keeping local control, local jobs, local profits in the community, there was this other rail belt consolidation consideration. And there's been long talk about how there are six utilities across the whole of the rail belt, and that situation is unlike anywhere else you will find in the lower 48. And it has real operational consequences. And so just for instance, recently, REAP, the Renewable Energy Project Alaska's board, endorsed this transaction not because of price or because of utility rates, but because of the effect that it can have on fostering new and innovative renewable energy type technologies across the entire rail belt. So there are spillover effects even beyond just the Anchorage community.
Mm-hmm. And I guess who has endorsed? I know that AEDC has said we endorse this vote and we're going to take a very close look at the due diligence that happens after that. I believe it's the Anchorage Chamber
of Commerce.
Has REAP endorsed it? I don't know.
They have.
Okay. So, people are paying attention and stepping up, but they're only giving you a green light to the vote and saying, let's look at what you come up with after that. Right.
Yeah, and I think that's good. I mean, we have to get to the vote, and then we have all of the due diligence to do, and then we need to sit down and come up with the work. And your listeners and our members need to hold our feet to the fire. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to do this, and we need to do it right.
Mm-hmm. You know, process is something that's come up all the time. There were other people who expressed interest, and we really haven't talked about that here today. How did they come about? Some people sort of thought, well, wow, why isn't there an open bidding process? And I think that goes back to the request to the city to look at Chugach and MLMP. It was specifically look at that. But how did these other players get involved?
Yeah, we were started on this train because the Assembly told us to go have this conversation with Chugach, but that was a public resolution that the Assembly passed. And once it became clear that there was serious consideration of potentially doing something with MLMP, we were approached by other folks. And the administration took that approach seriously for at least a couple reasons. One was we realized that in addition to having our own financial analysts give us an understanding of what MLMP was worth, that the appearance of other market players could provide a real market test on what Chugach was telling us and even what our own financial analysts were telling us. But also, we were curious to see what was out there. Maybe there was some other better deal other than what Chugach could offer. The result of all of that work was that we were pretty confident that Chugach was offering us a fair price, a competitive price for the utility, and that there weren't any other special considerations out there for any other buyers that would knock us off the course that we had been set on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The other thing that was in my mind from what the reading I did was this idea that you should be selling to the highest bidder, which if we did do that, we might end up with two different utilities in Anchorage.
That's right. And
which it doesn't sort of solve what we're trying to do here.
And that gets us all the way back to one of the first callers who mentioned maybe we should just start over and use the original charter process, put it out to bid. That process is not well designed for this transaction for precisely the reason that you said. If you started by setting some criteria that said we're going to sell to the highest bidder, it's possible that you might get a New York hedge fund who offers not $1 billion, but $1.1 billion. And if we sell to that enterprise, we would lose local control, we would send all the profits out of town, we would still have utilities, two utilities in Anchorage, and we would probably be stuck with that arrangement forever. Mm-hmm. At that point, the same business community that started this conversation will look to us and say, guys, what have you guys done? Mm-hmm. So then you might say, all right, well, we can get around that process by designing criteria that we will score all the incoming bids. It gives extra points for Chugach-like features. So if you have member-owned cooperative rights or some kind of local control, or if you have unique synergies, or if you need to, if you collect your rates on a tier methodology so that you're not asking for as much profit when you set your rates, at some point, Chugach looks at the public criteria and will say, well, we don't need to compete as competitively on price because we're going to win all
these
of these other factors.
Yeah.
So that process had a real risk of producing a poor result here. And that's why we didn't ask for that carte blanche process that ends in an uncertain way that's only for the assembly to control. I think that is part of the effective response to some of the process concerns that we've read about in the newspaper. And one of the things I think Charles Wolforth mentioned very effectively in his article.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, I had another question. Now it just flew out of my head. I did think, you know, are there lessons learned here for the municipality? Would you do anything differently going forward? If for some reason, you know, is there something, you know, the non-disclosure, which I understand that was there because at the request of these companies, because if they did get into they did get more involved, then they wouldn't want out there.
We've heard those process concerns too. So reminding where we got here, so we start in April with the letter and we start with July with the assembly direction. From July to December, we're in the throes of the process. So there's not going to be any information coming out at that point one way or the other. But starting in December, we say cards face up and Chugach puts its information out in the public domain. There is a little bit of a lag for us to get our own financial analyst document out and for us to get the other expressions of interest out. I think in a perfect world, we would have turned all of that over right away in December, but it gets out by January, February. So if there is a fault to be had, it's in that window. Now, the question that comes to us is, why would you ever sign non-disclosure agreements? And I'll say there are good arguments on both sides of that, but the way that we had resolved it was we thought we would get more information to make a better decision if we agreed to say we will not sing your information from the mountaintops, but know that we can never waive the Public Records Act requirement. So if anybody like the newspaper or the public radio station asks us for this information, it will get out there. We had some confidence that, especially in our community where we have interested players, that information would get out there, and we were not shy about telling people that that information existed. In the ordinance that creates Proposition 10, you'll see whereases that say, whereas we retained a financial analyst and whereas other people expressed interest. So we were confident we'd get out there. We got it out there as quickly as we could.
Wow. We could have talked another hour on this, I'm sure. But I really, really think, I thought we had good callers asking interesting things. I hope it illuminates it for more voters. I want to thank Bill Falsey, Anchorage City Manager, and Lee Thiebert from CEO of Chugach Electric, and all those callers. I'll be back next week on Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska, along with co-host Senior Judge Elaine Andrews, when we talk to the FBI about their role here in Alaska. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Dave Waldron is our audio engineer. I'm Kathleen McCoy. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska, and don't forget to vote.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.